commanded that the vessels of gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem be brought, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought in the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood and stone. Immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, opposite the lampstand. And the king saw the hand as it wrote. The king's colour changed and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave way and his knees knocked together. The king called loudly to bring in the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers. The king declared to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and shows me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king the interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed, and his colour changed, and his lords were perplexed. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banqueting hall. And the queen declared, "O king, live forever. Let not your thoughts alarm you or your colour change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods was found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him the chief of the magicians, enchanters, Chaldeans, and astrologers, because of an excellent spirit, knowledge, and understanding to interpret dreams and explain riddles and solve problems that were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show you the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king answered and said to Daniel, "You are that Daniel, one of the exiles of Judah, whom the king my father brought from Judah. I have heard of you that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the enchanters, have been brought in before me to read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not show the interpretation of the matter. But I have heard that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold round your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Nevertheless, I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened, so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind, and sets over it whom he will. And you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this, but you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. And the vessels of his house have been brought in before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. But the God in whose hand is your breath and whose are all your ways, you have not honoured. Then from his presence the hand was sent, and this writing was inscribed. And this is the writing that was inscribed: Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. This is the interpretation of the matter. Mene, God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel was clothed with purple, a chain of gold was put round his neck, and a proclamation was made about him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar the Chaldean king was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old.
Thank you for reading that. It's good to have the whole chapter read because we're not going to have time to look at it all in detail. So having that whole story laid out before us is quite helpful. We're actually going to begin tonight with a quiz. And you might think, why? Well, hopefully it will become clear. If not, I'm doing a bad job. But we'll do a quiz. And I'm going to divide you, so there's a bit of competition, so it'll make it a bit fun. So we'll just divide it sort of down the middle here. Everyone from John Arnold that way is a team. You guys will join in there. Everybody, that way is a team. Appoint a captain. Who's going to be a captain on each team? John's your captain. All right, who's captain over here? Okay. All right, so just relay your answers to the captain, and we'll see how it goes. There will be no prizes, by the way, but it's for honor and respect. So here's the quiz. We're going to start out. It's been called the Summer of Sport, hasn't it, this summer? So we're going to start out with some sports questions. All right. You've heard this probably over and over again on the news recently. So who was the last British man to win Wimbledon? All right, first hand to go up. Yeah, okay, John. Fred Perry is correct. Well done. Okay, what year did he win? What year did he win Wimbledon? Second question, what year did he win? Yes. No, not 1939. 36, Ian is correct. Well done, Ian. That's all right. You weren't there, okay. Well, you would have been here for the next question, so here's the next one. Another sports question, but different sports. What year did England win the Football World Cup? It was a bit of a tie, so I'll go here first. 66, well done, okay. Same thing here. Who did they beat and what was the score? John got it first. Oh, yes, score? 4-2, yes, well done. And way to say West Germany, that was under the days of communism, so that's right, well done, West Germany. Okay, we're switching a bit now. Sorry to rub in British sports woes, but I am an American, and it's probably going to get worse over the Olympics, isn't it, for you guys? Oh, sorry. But Tour de France, did he win yet? Is it? Okay, yay, well done, yeah, you got one. Okay. All right, now switching completely, some London Underground questions. So what is the length of the Underground network? What's the length? Any guesses? All right, I'm gonna usurp the captain and go to the back. 522? You've overshot it by quite a bit. Yeah, too much. Yeah, this team, guess? $450? No, still quite a bit lower, actually. 249 miles. You're proud of the underground. Yeah, 249 miles. Another underground question. Which underground station has the most underground platforms? Which station? Yes? Not Oxford Circus, no? He's part of your team. And it's correct. Yeah, John, his dad got a question correct. I'm sure he was surprised about that, but he did. Baker Street, how many platforms? How many platforms, Baker Street? No, there are 10. There's actually, I can't remember which one. There's another station that has 10 as well, but a couple of those are like First Capital Connect, so they don't count. So actual underground tube trains, it's Baker Street. Okay, final question. I know you're disappointed about this, but we're switching to geography question. What is the longest river in the UK? Yes. Yes, it is the Severn. How long is it? Any guesses? Okay, we'll be here all night. So the Severn, correct, 220 miles long. Number two river, any? This is a free-for-all. Number two, yes? The Thames, at how long? 215 miles long is the Thames, so close. All right, so that's our quiz. I'm sure you were enthralled, you enjoyed it. I work with nursing homes, and quizzes are quite popular. You'll see people doing quizzes there. Why do a quiz? Well, all of the questions that we just looked at, I think you could walk away tonight, go out the door, and you might forget that the London Underground Network is 249 miles long. It's not going to make a whole lot of difference to your life, is it? Probably not going to change what you do when you get to the office in the mornings. Probably not going to change what you do at Breeden. I don't know, maybe, but probably not. What's the home game, the home quiz game called? Trivial Pursuit, right? Trivial information. It doesn't mean a whole lot. It doesn't affect our lives. But there are other things in life, I think, that are worth remembering. And here's one. Does anybody know what that is? Chislehurst War Memorial, correct. I pass by this quite often on the bus when I go to one of the places I work. And I think most of us here would agree. We would say that that's worth remembering. Remembering lives lost, people who've died to protect freedoms, remembering the cost of war, remembering that it's costly, people die. We don't want to enter into wars lightly. Thinking about the Second World War and the atrocities committed under the Nazi regime, when we see another government or another individual going that direction, we want to remember what happened before and say, no, stop. Things are worth remembering, not so much just so we have the facts, right? We could have all the facts about the Second World War in our mind for a pub quiz, but we want to remember to live differently. We want to remember so it affects our lives, so that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, or so that we do repeat the things that were good that happened in the past. So it's not just remembering facts, but it's remembering in such a way that it influences our lives. And in the Bible, this theme of remembering, you see it all over the place. And we'll mention a few places in the Old Testament where you see this idea of remembrance. So in Genesis chapter 28, this is where we have Jacob. And Jacob is, he goes to sleep and he has a dream, you may remember. There's angels ascending and descending on a ladder, and he hears God speak to him. The next morning he wakes up, wow, God spoke to me. This is the house of God, he calls the place. He gets the stone from that he was laying on, I don't know why he slept on a stone, but he did. And he picks up the stone, he sets it up, puts some oil on it. So to remember, this was the place I met with God, God met with me. I want to remember that. We see the same thing, memory in Exodus, when Moses institutes the Passover. So Moses tells the people that what you need to do is, you know, you get a lamb, you kill the lamb, you put the blood over the doorpost. And he tells them for an immediate reason, right? Because the angel of death is going to come through. If they don't do this, the firstborn will die. So they had to do it then. It was very important. But Moses says, now it's not just for now, but it's for the future as well. So you need to do this again. And when you do it again and your children ask you, hey, Dad, why are you putting lamb's blood on the doorpost? You say, the Lord delivered us from oppression in Egypt. The Lord saved the firstborn. Again, not just to remember the facts, but to remember that a God is a God who delivers, a God whom we should respect, honor, be faithful to, remember. And then Joshua closes, it's bookended actually almost by two acts of remembrance. So at the beginning of Joshua, when the children of Israel have been wandering around in the desert for many years, they come to the Jordan River, they're about to cross, a miraculous event happens so they can cross, and Joshua says, I want leaders of each of the 12 tribes to go get a stone, and I want you to set it up to remember. God brought us into the land that he promised. And at the end of Joshua, just before Joshua dies, Joshua says to the people, are you going to follow the Lord? Are you going to do all that he set out for us in the laws he gave us in Moses? And the people say, yes, we'll do that. And Joshua sets up a stone to bear witness to this event. And again, I can imagine mom and dad with a kid walking along. Hey, Dad, what's that big stone there? Well, let me tell you, son, that's where we promised to obey God and to do what he asked us to do. Again, not just remembering the facts, but living in light of it. So what does all this have to do with Daniel chapter 5? Well, in Daniel chapter 5, I think we see a huge failure of remembrance, a huge failure of remembrance on the part of Belshazzar. Now, I think it's important for us as we sort of get into the text here to sort of try to come up with some understanding of who this guy Belshazzar is. If we can get to grips with a bit of his character, at least what's revealed to us, I think we'll see why this his lack of memory was so horrible, really. So let's delve into Belshazzar a bit. Now, it's worthwhile just mentioning a few facts to give us some background. So Nebuchadnezzar is called Belshazzar's father. And it's father there is used generically. So he was not actually, Nebuchadnezzar was not actually his father. He was his grandfather. So father there is used more in the terms of sort of our fathers, our ancestors. In America, we say the founding fathers. Thomas Jefferson, I'm not related to him, right? But he's sort of my father going back who founded my nation, right? So it's kind of used more in that generic sense, not his direct father, but grandfather. And he's ruling, but he's ruling in Babylon, so the city of Babylon. He has jurisdiction there, kind of a regent in that area. But his father, whose name I always get wrong, you see it on the screen, Nabonidus, is ruling sort of in a different part of the empire. So, and you sort of get a hint of that in his promise in verse 7, when he says, whoever can come in and read the writing, that person will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. So Daniel seems to be aware of the situation of what's going on because he's number two. He only has the authority to make whoever does what he says number three. So we get a little indication in the text of what we know historically, perhaps. So that's a bit of background of who he is. Also, it's important to remember because when we start to look at his character, this will become important. At the time that he's throwing this feast, the city's actually under siege. So you don't really get that from Daniel, what he reveals to us. But at the time that this feast is going on, the city's encircled, right? The Persian armies are there. They're putting Babylon under siege. And that will become important as we think about his character. So what do we know about Belshazzar? What do we know about his character? Now, admittedly, Daniel doesn't sort of go into a great character study of the man. We don't get huge amounts of detail. But I think we get enough to find out about him. And I think we see in those first four verses a few things. I think we see some pride in Belshazzar. We see some arrogance and some intemperance as well. And I distinguish between pride and arrogance because I think you can be proud and hide it. But arrogance is pride on display. And I think Belshazzar is putting his pride on display. So let's just read through those first few verses again. So it says, King Belshazzar made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. Belshazzar, when he tasted the wine, commanded the vessels of gold and silver that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem be brought, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought in the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords and his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So remember, this grand feast that he's holding, now he's doing this quite publicly, isn't he? He's got thousands of lords there, and he's drinking in front of them. So it's not as if he's trying to blend into the crowd, but he's putting himself forward so everyone can see him. You might expect that. He is the ruler of the city. But his city is encircled by enemy troops, okay? It's surrounded. They're under siege. And this is where you start to see a bit of the arrogance of the guy, I think. When you read a historian called Xenophon, look him up, you can actually get it for free online, you can read his history. He says that the Babylonians kind of had the idea that they could withstand a siege for 20 years. The river ran through the city, they thought they had plenty of supplies, so Belshazzar's probably thinking, we're all right, we're secure, we're safe, so let's have the feast. And the feast was going on probably throughout the city, not just in the royal palaces as well. So you see a bit of his arrogance there. Perhaps, maybe I'm reading a bit too much into this, maybe a bit of intemperance. Look in verse 2. So Belshazzar, then you get the sort of kind of aside, when he tasted the wine, commanded that the vessels of gold and silver be brought. So maybe he's drinking a bit too much. He's letting the wine cloud his judgment. And then he calls for this wine to be brought forth. So we see a bit of his character. And what how do we know his pride again? Well, I think we can see it also in what he calls to be done. So he brings in these articles from the temple. If you go back to Daniel 1, you see this. It talks about how Nebuchadnezzar, his grandfather, went into Jerusalem, took Daniel and others away, but also took these articles from the temple back and placed them into the temples of his gods. So he doesn't just leave them there, he calls them to be brought forth and to drink from them. So they're having a feast, having a party, a good time. Yeah, let's get those articles from the Hebrew God. Let's get those and let's drink from them. And then they begin to praise, don't they, the gods of iron, silver, bronze, wood, and stone. Probably shorthand, Daniel's just saying they're idols, they're gods. They're praising those things. Again, you see some pride, some arrogance in this guy. He's taking the articles from the defeated Jews, from their God, putting them on display and showing that they are victorious. Does he have a reason to be proud? I think if you were just to read this sort of, the first part of it, you might think, yeah, he does have a reason to be proud. Think about it. He's the leader of Babylon. Right, this is one of the greatest empires of ancient history, and he's the leader of one of the greatest cities there. His grandfather was the great king, Nebuchadnezzar. Jerusalem was conquered. It's not, they didn't make it up. Okay, it actually happened. Jerusalem was conquered, and they've got the proof right there in front of them. The articles from the temple. A way to say, look, we did it. Our gods are victorious. We can take these things from their God. We can just kind of mock them, have fun with them, because we won. So you might think, yeah, the guy seems to have reason to be proud when you look at it from the outside. But Daniel goes on, as we had read to us, and I think we see that although from the outside, you may think that this guy has reason to be proud, to be arrogant, Daniel assures us no. And this is where we see Belshazzar's failure to remember. So we're going to look at three aspects of this, of Belshazzar's failure to remember. First, we'll look at what he failed to remember in verses 18 to 21. Second, we'll look at why he should have remembered it. And then finally, we're going to look at the price of forgetting. So what he failed to remember, why he should have remembered it, and the price of forgetting. So what was it that he failed to remember? Well, let's remind ourselves. Let's go back and look at verses 18 to 21. So just to briefly recap, remember, they're having the feast. There's writing on the wall. Miraculous, a hand appears. Writing comes on. Belshazzar's pretty troubled by this. He seems to know that this isn't good news for him, but he doesn't quite know what it means, but he's afraid. So he calls in all the people that he thinks might be able to help him out with this. Nobody can help. And then the queen comes in. And again, maybe this queen is not necessarily his wife, but could be a grandmother or something like that, and reminds him of this guy, Daniel. So Daniel comes in, says to Belshazzar, yes, I'll do what you asked me to do. I don't really need your gifts, but I'll tell you what the writing means. And that's what we pick up in verse 18. So Daniel says this to him, O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, kingship and greatness, and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened, so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets it over whom he will. What did he fail to remember? Well, he failed to remember basically what we see there in the last part of 21, that it is the Most High God who rules the kingdom of mankind and sets it over whom he will. Why did he forget this? How do we know he forgot it? Well, he forgot it because of his behavior. It's evidenced by what he does. He brings out the articles from the temple, and he's saying, "We won. We crushed them. We crushed this Hebrew God. Our gods are victorious." You see his arrogance. And we get the strike, we get sort of the very, it cuts to the heart there in verse 22, what Daniel says. And this is where there's the difference between remembering the facts and living in light of the facts. It seems that Belshazzar knew the facts. Daniel points that out to him. Look in verse 22. He says, "And you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this." It's not that he didn't know. He knew the facts. He knew these things had happened to his grandfather, but he's not taking account of them. He's forgetting them because he's not living them out in his life. And Daniel says, what you should have remembered is that you should be humble. It's God who's in control. He's the one who brings up kings. He's the one who takes them down. You've seen it visibly displayed in the life of your grandfather. You know this, but you've done exactly the opposite. Instead of humbling yourself, what does he do in verse 23? He lifts himself up. He exalts himself before the Lord of heaven. And again, he shows it by bringing out these vessels and making us a bit of a spectacle with them. And then Daniel says, "You have praised the gods of silver, gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know. But the God in whose hand is your breath and whose are all your ways, you have not honored." So you lost the plot completely, Belshazzar. You're praising lifeless gods, no substance, and the very God who has your life in his hands, your breath, you dismiss. You exalt yourself instead of humbling yourself. That's what he failed to remember. Why should he have remembered it? Well, I think if you look through the whole chapter, you get a sort of refrain that sort of is like a drumbeat over and over and over again in the passage. You see it in verse 2. Nebuchadnezzar, his father. You see it again in verse 11. This is the man in your kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy God. In the days of your father. In verse 13, you see it again. And this is from his own mouth when Daniel comes in. The king, my father. And again in verse 18. The Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father. And in verse 22, you're his son. And 23 as well. Again, your father, your father, your father, you're his son. This wasn't something that happened in Belshazzar's life, you know, like thousands and thousands of years in the distant sort of mists of time that Belshazzar had no connection to. No, this is his grandfather. And Daniel, again, remember, he says it. You knew it. You knew it. You knew it. It was on display. You should have remembered it. But he hardens himself and exalts himself when he should have humbled himself. So finally, what's the price then of this forgetting? And remember, forgetting not so much that he didn't know the facts, but not living them out, living in light of the facts that he knew. What's the price? Well, we see it. It's God's judgment, isn't it? Daniel comes in, he reads to him the writing on the wall, and the writing is, "You have been weighed, and you have been found wanting." And that night, his life and his kingdom taken away. Again, from the historian that I mentioned, what the Persians did, they dammed up the river that ran through the city, and then they were able to get under the walls. And while the city was probably drunk for the most part, celebrating this feast, they came in, took over. The same night, his life and his kingdom were required of him. It's worth asking a question, though, I think. Why was God so quick to judge in Belshazzar's case? When you look at the life of his grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, God's pretty patient with him. If you've been coming into the evening services, you would have seen that, right? So you remember in the earlier chapters, Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, don't bow down to the idol. They get tossed into the furnace, so hot that the people that tossed them in died. They don't burn up. A miraculous fourth person appears. They come out. They don't even smell of smoke. Nebuchadnezzar's blown away by this, you know, and your gods they're amazing. But it doesn't seem to quite click in his life. Right? So he saw this great thing, yet he seems to go back and sort of exalt himself because God has to humble him again and has to make him go out of his mind, essentially, and be driven out as a wild beast. And it's not until, as we saw just read in this chapter, that he acknowledges that it is God who's in charge, that he sort of comes to himself. So he seems to acknowledge, and God gives him another chance. But why so patient with granddad and not so patient with grandson? Well, again, Daniel doesn't give us a huge amount of detail here, but I think there's a principle that we see in the New Testament and one of the teachings of Jesus that might have something to do with God's judgment here. So I'll put it on the screen. This comes from Luke chapter 12, verses 47 to 48. And Jesus says this, "And the servant who knew his master's will, but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required. And from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more." Now, Jesus is pretty clear in this teaching that you do wrong, there's a consequence. The amount of knowledge you have doesn't mean that you don't sort of, there's not a consequence. You can't sort of plead ignorance. "I didn't know, you know, what I was doing. I wasn't sure it was wrong." No, Jesus says the principle is you do wrong, there's a consequence. But for the one who knows and then still proceeds to do what they know they shouldn't do, much will be required of them. What do we see in Belshazzar's life? It rings out so true in verse 22. Daniel says, I don't know if Daniel had tears in his eyes or not, but he said, you knew. This was your grandfather. You saw what happened in his life. And he took the knowledge that he had visibly on display, and he said, "No, it's me. I'm in charge. It's our kingdom. Look what we've done." He should have been on the floor before the God who sets up nations and removes them. He should have learned the lesson that he saw in his grandfather's life, but he didn't. He knew much, and God required much of him, his life and his kingdom, on the same day. It's a tragedy, really, the story of Belshazzar we see. So finally, I think we need to ask ourselves a question, as we do any time we read the scriptures. What does this have to do with us? Well, are we remembering? And I think if we think of this principle that we've just talked about with Jesus, you know, we have been given much. Everyone sitting in this room tonight stands on this side of the cross. You may think, wow, Belshazzar got to see a lot. He knew what happened in his grandfather's life. That's pretty amazing. We sit on the side of history where the God himself took on flesh. He became a man. He revealed himself to the fullest, completest extent that is absolutely possible. We have been given much. So much has God given of himself for us, for our forgiveness in Christ. That's a lot of responsibility. Much has been given to us. Therefore, much will be required of us, I think. We must remember this. We must remember what's been done to us, the grace that's been shown to us in our lives. And we need to live accordingly. We need to be living lives. If you are trusting Christ, we need to be saying, thank you. Thank you. And this remembrance principle isn't just an Old Testament thing. Remember what Jesus said at the Last Supper. Do this in remembrance of me. Every time we take communion, to remember, thank you, thank you, thank you for the grace you've given. So for those of us that are trusting Christ, we need to remember. I don't know everyone in the room. If some of you here haven't trusted Christ, then I think you really need to listen to the warning of Belshazzar's life. Remember, the same day his life and his kingdom were required of him. Heed the warning of Belshazzar's deliberate forgetfulness. Maybe you're here tonight and you know a bit about Jesus. You don't know, there's still questions you have in your mind. Ask them now. We're going to be having time for tea, coffee. Ask someone. Get this sorted out. Who is this guy, Jesus? Because you need to know that. Because if you don't, there's consequences. And listen to the warning that we see in Belshazzar. And finally, for those of us that are Christians, let's take this opportunity again. Lay any sin aside in our lives and remember anew this great love, this great forgiveness that we've been shown in Christ. Whether you remember that West Germany was defeated 4-2 or not, to be honest, doesn't make much difference. What makes all the difference in the world is, do you remember that God himself became a man, made himself like you to save you? You've been given much. I've been given much. Let's remember. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this passage. We thank you for Daniel. We thank you for his life, that he was a man who you put really in extraordinary circumstances, and yet he had a great humility. He could have used his privileged position to exalted himself, and yet we see a humility in Daniel's life. So we thank you for that. And Lord, we thank you that you have given us Belshazzar as a reminder to us that we need to be not just remembering who Jesus was, knowing the facts, being able to repeat a gospel outline, but we need to be living in light of that, giving ourselves to Christ, being transformed and changed by his Spirit and the work that he does in us. So please, I pray that you would help us to remember tonight, in the future, until you come again. Praise in Jesus' name. Amen.
Belshazzar faced the judgment of God and was found